That's right. Telling it like it is here on a Thursday morning, a rainy Thursday, is the car guru, Lenny Lawson. Hey, Lenny.
Hey, man.
What's happening?
Yeah, you can just, you can take your chances, or you can rely on reliable people.
Such as the car guru.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you for finishing that line.
Yeah.
We didn't even rehearse that, did we?
We did not. We don't rehearse anything on this show.
No, obviously.
Can you tell?
yeah. It's all ad-lib. I'm still in exile.
Well, I like the group Exile. Remember them?
No. I'm in exile. I feel like Napoleon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when Napoleon was in exile. You remember where he was in exile at?
On Elba.
There you go.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
I've been to Elba. I was there. It's a pretty place.
Mm-hmm.
Just off the coast of Italy. But, yeah, I'm following instructions. I do not have the virus, but I was exposed, as we talked about, so I'm doing my good citizen thing, I guess, and working from home. I'm sitting in my guitar picking room right now, my workstation, surrounded by computers,
mm-hmm.
and trying to provide something, some kind of some sense out of the world, man. One of the things that I guess the car business has changed a lot since the pandemic, but I tell you what, a pandemic of a different sort hit the camera industry many years ago. As you can imagine, I don't know if you were used to get film developed. Where, back in the old days when you used to get film developed, where did you go?
Well, back in the old days when I was a teenager, starting at about 15, 16, 17, right in there, I used to take a lot of my own pictures and develop them myself. So the black and white stuff, I usually develop myself, but the color stuff, I would take it to Kmart usually, because that's where my mother worked for many, many years, retired from Kmart, and so I would always take it there.
You know, think about that is one industry that has changed so much.
Oh, yeah.
From film to digital, and then now the elimination of cameras themselves. The industry has changed dramatically. In a relatively short period of time. In 2010, there were 121 million cameras sold, or shipped, basically, for sale. In 2018, that has fallen to below 20 million. So, you know, the industry has been decimated, and of course, we all know what did it. It was the cell phone that
mm-hmm.
did it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just look back. I go back and look at the pictures that I was taking with my cell phone just 10 years ago. The quality was horrendous compared to what it is today. I mean, this iPhone that I'm using has, I'm talking on it right now, it has three cameras on it. You know, it does panoramic shots. It does 4K video. I mean, it's just unbelievable what these things can do, and you understand, you know, what that has done to the industry. The reason I say that is to say that the same thing is happening right now, except on a much faster basis. We are, all businesses are changing, and the way we interact with our customers is changing. I was reading a little bit about restaurant industry, and, you know, not only do they not have people coming in to go out to eat, you know, they're doing curbside, but when people eat curbside, they don't get extras. You know, they don't buy additional add-ons. They don't, you know, they're not drinking alcohol there, which is a big profit
mm-hmm.
thing for them. Or even getting tea. You know, tea is probably one of the most profitable things that a restaurant sells.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also, people aren't ordering dessert. You know, so all of those things are changing. So the business models are having to change. The car industry is very resilient, and I think it's made some things pretty clear as far as the pandemic is concerned, that people still want cars. They don't want the shift away from public transportation and Uber and stuff has been dramatic. And this has spurred sales at car dealerships. I was talking to a dealer in Baltimore yesterday. The reason I was is I was looking for a truck for a customer of mine, and he wanted a specific color with a specific set of options on it, and the only dealer I could find that had it was a Ford dealer in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And I called, and he was very nice, and he said, you know, I'm kind of guilty to say this. I asked him how his business has been. He says, I feel a little guilty to say this, but our business has been phenomenal. I mean, we've broken all records. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that it's not really so much pent-up demand, I don't think. It's just the fact that people are, you know, kind of moving away from some of the things that they were doing in terms of the types of vehicles they were driving, the way they get around, especially in big cities. Now, you know, even in East Tennessee, you know, sales have aren't what they were, but they're still pretty good. And we don't have public transportation, really. I don't guess the Johnson City bus system really counts. We don't have subways. We do have Uber and Lyft and those kind of things, but I don't know how widely they're used. We don't have a lot of cab service. We're more of an independent sort. Mm-hmm. A lot more car ownership per capita in other places. But so, you know, the industry is adapting. Another thing that we have seen during the epidemic has been the interest in pickup and delivery for car dealerships. There were stores in metro markets and places where they shut down where they allowed, the only department they allowed to be open in a car dealership was the service department. Now in Tennessee, you know, they never shut down car dealers because they considered even sales to be an essential service. And of course, I was very grateful for that, but they didn't have that benefit in a lot of places. Like in Kentucky, the only place that could be open or the only department was the service and parts department. And the customers weren't coming in, so they had to innovate, and they started offering delivery and sanitization services. That's hard for me to say. Sanitization. Is that how you say that?
Sanitization, yeah.
Sanitization. And so that was helped them to be able to, you know, fill their service departments and keep the business going. But adaptation will always be what we have to do, and to whatever the circumstances are. You know, after right now, the election is casting a pall a little bit over demand, and people are kind of waiting around to see what happens. And you know, regardless of who wins, life will go on, right? And it, you know, certain things may change, but and a lot of the change that we see, at least half of the country won't like.
Yeah.
But you know, we'll still be waking up in the morning and getting in our cars, and some of us will be getting in our cars and going to work. Some of us will be working from home, you know, like I am. And I've found right now, just being here and stuck in the house, that I can get a lot done, but I feel very disconnected, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need that human interaction, I think. I know I do. There's so much that I learned just from observation in my business, just walking through the store. And, you know, just monitoring, without even realizing it, you know, monitoring people's behaviors and stuff. So this work at home thing is a bunch of crap as far as I'm concerned. it's not for me. I can understand for, you know, families when maybe the mother in the household really doesn't want to work, has a lot of responsibility at home that she can't get done, but she has to work 8 to 5. And you know, in order to maintain her job, when in fact she could probably get all of that done in fewer hours, and would maybe even be willing to take less money if they could work at home. I think we're going to see a lot of that. So we will adapt to whatever happens. The camera industry will never come back, more than likely, as good as smartphones are. But you know, it'll just be replaced by something else. Usually, something fills the void, doesn't it, Timmy?
Yes, indeed. Technology continues.
So, yes, that's right. Just in the car news, there's a lot of recalls going on right now. Everybody from BMW to Buick General Motors is recalling a lot of the new Chevy Corvettes. A bunch of Cadillacs are being recalled. The new 2021 Chevy Trailblazer already being recalled. Buick Encore vehicles. There is a serious problem with a sensor connection that could impact the ability of the brakes to work on the car. So that's something, if you own any of those models, any of those vehicles, you need to call your Chevrolet dealer and see if your GM dealer and see if your vehicle is included in that recall. Ford has a few recalls. They just announced a recall on F-350 trucks with a certain gas engine. And these are being recalled. It's not a major recall, but Hyundai, Land Rover, Mercedes-Benz, Honda, Toyota, all of them have announced recent recalls. So, you know, if you want to find out, you can go to two government websites, National Highway Traffic Safety Administration website, or you can just call your dealer and just ask them, give them, have your VIN number, your 17-digit VIN number ready, and ask them if you're if you have any open recalls on your vehicle. And if you do, get it scheduled and get it taken care of. It's important to do that. Well, we'll take our first break and be back here in just a minute.
Back here on a Thursday morning edition of My Car Guru as the Zeta, the tropical storm, moves its way through our area quickly today.
Mm-hmm. How did they jump from Delta to Zeta so quick?
You know, I was wondering about that because they said they were going to start with the Greek alphabet and then probably go in order. And I don't guess they did, unless there was a lot of little systems that I didn't hear about that got named.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked it better when they did Bob and Susan and, you know,
Ted
nice
and Alice.
American
name. Huh? And Ted and Alice.
Yeah. Bob, Carol, Ted and Alice. That's right.
Yeah.
You know, back in the early 70s, I did a stint in the parts department. I was the delivery guy. Our parts truck was as early 70s Chevy Love truck. You remember the Love truck?
I do, yeah.
SUV built by Isuzu, but that's what I did all my running in. And so people would call into the dealership and they would order parts. These were not individuals. These are shops, basically. And so I would put all those orders together. The guys at the counter would pull the orders and then put them in a box for me or just lay them at the door with the tickets. I would load it up. I would go out and visit these businesses. That was one of my favorite things to do. I loved going into these shops and interacting. They knew I was the dealer's kid. And, you know, sometimes they were nice and sometimes they were, you know, condescending. And, you know, but it was all out of love, I'm sure, because I was in a Chevy Love.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
And, but, you know, I got to know these people. Another one of my responsibilities, though, was I was the official key cutter. So when somebody needed a key, a GM key, we had two keys. We had a square key, a square head key, which basically started the car, and then a round key, and that was the one that unlocked the doors.
Mm-hmm.
Every key had a number stamped on the key. That number referred to another number in the book that we had, and that number actually was anywhere from 6 to 8 digits. And that was actually the settings that you put the key cutter in. It was a handheld device. And it was, you know, wasn't anything fancy. It was something I could do just by loading the key in, setting all the numbers, and then squeezing the trigger, basically, and then moving it a notch to cut the next groove. So that's how I cut keys. We normally charge $2 or $3, you know, to cut a key, whatever the cost of the key is. We really weren't trying to make any profit. It's more of a customer service. But all somebody had to do early in the time, Tim, was just to, they could even call us and say, hey, I need you to cut a key, and we'd cut a key for them.
Uh-huh.
Well, that changed when the feds realized and the police realized that a lot of people were getting keys cut that didn't own the car and stealing cars that way.
Uh-huh.
So they put all kinds of controls on that. So they had to provide us with proof of ownership of the car before we would cut a key, which makes perfectly good sense. But not while I was doing it. I was just cutting keys for whoever asked. Today, it's a totally different deal because almost every modern car has a key fob. It doesn't have. It has electronic key fob. It does not have a regular hard key. Now, there's still a lot of cars that do. But the key fob itself is electronic, and many times it's sending a signal to the car to tell it whether to start or not. And with some vehicles, if you don't have your fob with your key, the car won't start. Doesn't matter if you stick the key in the ignition, turn it, it's not going to start.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing that has really changed has been the cost involved to replace a key and what's involved in doing it. So somebody loses a key fob. They come to the dealership. They have this mental picture from the 70s and 80s and maybe even the 90s of what a key used to cost. You know, and then their mind, they're thinking, 10, 20, maybe 30 bucks at the most to get a new key.
Mm-hmm.
When you tell them it's $350, it kind of puts them into a little shock.
Mm-hmm.
It teaches everybody also that you don't lose your keys to your car.
Right.
The basic process if somebody does lose their key is we have to order a key fob for them. Sometimes we keep them in stock if it's a real common, like for F-150s, we keep those in stock, Ford Explorers and stuff. We have those key fobs. There, we have about four or five different types for Ford, and I think for Nissan, there's like three different types. But if we don't have it in stock, we have to order it. It comes in the next day. And then you have to bring your car to the dealership, and we have to have your car for anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes to program that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you would think that as sophisticated of a society as we have in technology, that it wouldn't take 30 minutes to program a key when you can download complete new software on your iPhone in about probably 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the automakers have recognized this and are working to change it, where customers, as long as they have Wi-Fi in their car, and a lot of modern cars now have Wi-Fi, and if you're buying a car today, you need to ask and see if your vehicle does have Wi-Fi, because if it does, a lot of this programming, keys and of software updates to the vehicle, that can be that can happen at your house. You don't have to go to the dealership to do a lot of that stuff anymore. This is still evolving, Tim, and people are going to have different models. But you need to know, you know, when you're buying a car, ask them up front. Say, okay, if I lose this key fob, what's a new one going to cost me? Actually, some finance offices, some dealers sell insurance that you can buy that protects a bunch of different things, including your key fob being one of them. I would always check anytime you're in a finance office and you buy one of those packages, like an insurance policy, make sure you know what's covered, what's not, and you know, make a mental note of it, stick it in your glove box, something. Sometimes it's packaged together with tire and wheel protection, dent and ding protection. These are all different products that dealers sell to protect people's cars and also to make money. You know, there are basic keys, transponder keys. Some of the keys have a switchblade, like, built into it. It's not a knife. It's a key. You know, you push a button and the key pops out.
Mm-hmm.
But now the smart key fobs are the really expensive ones. And you can expect to pay anywhere between $220 to $500, depending on the car. And I would want to know that, you know, before I drive off in the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, if you do lose one, be prepared to wait a little while at the dealership. Like I say, over time, this will change. The next generation of keys, Tim, will be no key at all. And when you buy your vehicle, you will program your smartphone with the information about your car, and your smartphone will start your car and do everything else. So I would say within the next 3 to 5 years, you will see a major transition in that direction. And maybe within 10 years, there will be no more keys. Now, that will be a great thing. Then just people will have to be careful not to lose their smartphone, right?
Yeah.
Drop it in the pond, you know, at least have a waterproof version.
Or drop it somewhere else where a lot of people tend to drop it when they go relieve themselves sometimes. But anyway, I was going to ask you, back when you were cutting keys, do you remember how much it was back in the early 70s, 50 cents, something like that?
No, it's more than that. I mean, we probably charged somewhere between $2 and $5. I don't remember exactly.
Okay.
But it wasn't significant. And most people, when they came in, if they were a regular customer of ours, we just gave them the keys.
Right.
And, you know, but it was a simpler time. You know, I was in my an older Ford the other day. Well, I was in my Bronco. And, you know, the key in it, it has two keys as well, an ignition key and a door key and one for the rear hatch. 1970 model. But those keys back then, General Motors keys, the key cuts face down and Ford's face up.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has to be different, right?
I guess so. I can remember getting a key cut for probably 50, 75 cents at a hardware store or something like that. So.
Yeah, and you could, you know, but they didn't have the key codes for the cars. I mean, if you wanted to get a key cut for your house, it was no problem. They had a, you know, basically a duplicate or something that you know, use the pattern on your key and use that to cut cut another key. And they also did this on automotive keys, but those didn't always work very well.
Yeah.
So the best way to get a key cut at that time was to have a dealer do it.
Right.
And today it still is, but maybe in the not too distant future, you'll be able to do it yourself with your smartphone.
All right. The times, they are changing. We're going to take our last break and we'll come back and wrap things up. So we've heard some key aspects of the car business here today, and we start to wrap things up for this Thursday morning.
You know, another thing that's really changed is manual transmissions. You go back to 1995, 26% of all new vehicles had manual transmissions. Today, only 2.4% of sales are stick shift cars.
That's crazy.
And it's also dramatic in the number of people who cannot drive a vehicle with a stick shift. But you know, these are some of the things that are changing. And you look at the options that are the most popular features. Number one, the top five, Bluetooth technology. Number two, rear view camera. Number three, front seat heaters. Number four, navigation systems. And number five, a pretty traditional thing, leather seats. So it's just kind of interesting to see how all of this is going to play out as electric vehicles start to hit the market and add a whole new layer of complexity to this entire thing, such as where am I going to get charged up?
Mm-hmm.
That'll be a problem for some time, but we'll figure it out, won't we, Timmy?
We will. I was just tickled that my cigarette lighter and my 8-track player worked back in the day.
No kidding.
All right, that'll do it for My Car Guru for this Thursday morning, and we'll talk to you tomorrow, Lenny.